Chapter 14, Getting Organized, Getting Things Done. Anthony Robbins says that most people fail in life because they major in the minor things in life. So that brings me to the notion of time. What are you majoring in? I don't know about you, but I've certainly heard myself say things like, there's never enough time. People in all walks of life are now complaining that they are time poor. This is especially so for leaders who are constantly trying to find some work-life balance. This so-called scarcity of time makes them feel discontent and unhappy. It's almost like people are fighting time or struggling against time or against the clock. Where has the time gone, they say. However, there are 86,400 seconds in a day, 24 hours in a day, and 168 hours in a week. You are not going to get any more. That's it. End of story. 168 hours a week is what you have to play with. But we often say to ourselves things like, when I find the time. I'm sorry, but there's no more time to find. It's 168 hours. There's no more, no less. Charles Buxton once said, you'll never find time for anything. If you want time, you must make it. Wise words. For people who say that they don't have enough time, I remind them that they have exactly the same number of hours per day that were given to people like Helen Keller, Pasteur, Michelangelo, Mother Teresa, Leonardo da Vinci, Thomas Jefferson, Albert Einstein, and anyone else you want to name or think about. You still have only 168 hours a week, just like they had. How you use it is what matters. Anthony Robbins once said, once you have mastered time, you will understand how true it is that most people overestimate what they can accomplish in a year and underestimate what they can achieve in a decade. Time wasters. So what are those things that typically get in our way and cause us to lose time? There are some common ones which seem to occur regardless of the workplace or the nature of the work. Check the list below and see if any of these culprits are within your work life. Number 1. General interruptions. This is one of the most common time robbers. You may do well to look closely at your day's routine and ask what is happening. If the interruption is necessary, then it is not a time waster. Perhaps doing a time log of activities can help you spot the costly and insignificant interruptions that might be occurring as part of your job. You might also ask yourself the following questions as you're about to embark on a task. Is this going to be the best use of my time? Number 2. Meetings. Meetings seem to dominate a day's activities. How many of us have been in a meeting which lasted for an hour or more that could have been over in about 15 minutes? And how many meetings have you been in where you came away with no real actions and you mused to yourself, what was all that about? The key, therefore, is to determine how these meetings can be run more effectively. Is there an agenda? Is the meeting chair or facilitator keeping the meeting directed and on song? Is someone keeping track of all actions that need to be completed? Do we start the meeting knowing clearly what we want out of it? Number 3. Clutter. I've certainly heard people say that when their desk or workplace is cluttered, so is their brain or headspace. So, what will it take for you to have a system that allows you to have space for everything, as well as ensuring that the filing system on your computer is also neat and systematized? Barbara Hemphill once said, clutter is nothing more than postponed decisions. Number 4. Lacking goals. Having a lack of goals will also rob you of productive time because it causes you not to be focused and means you are more likely to be distracted. There is a stack of research showing that having clear goals enhances commitment, achievement, and performance. There are certainly plenty of reasons for not having specific goals, and sometimes it is simply a case of being too busy and overwhelmed to actually take time out to set some goals. Number 5, email. We simply don't seem to be able to get away from it. It is there 24/7. Whether the emails are addressed to us personally or whether we are simply copied in, they tend to hit our inbox with rapid regularity. I had a coaching session with a leader recently, and as she got up to leave, she glanced down at her smartphone and sighed that during our session, she had just received 29 emails. Almost every leader I know struggles with how to manage their emails and with trying to get the balance between getting back to people while at the same time managing their team and having the appropriate amount of interpersonal interaction. Some leaders that I am aware of have a rider at the bottom of their automated response which says something along the lines that they will only be checking emails once or twice a day, and therefore the sender ought not to expect an immediate reply. Number 6, poor structure. I'm fascinated by the number of direct reports that some leaders have. Convention says it ought to be a maximum of about 7 reports. If it's more than that, maybe you ought to look at your structure and see how you can put in an additional level of authority to reduce your load. Furthermore, I'm aware that some leaders are spread too thinly and are on too many committees, working parties, or projects. People in my workshops have often heard me say, "Keep the main thing the main thing." When you are spread too thinly, you're asking for trouble. It might be flattering to be included on a special project, or your ego might get a boost about being invited, but it could be your undoing. Figure out what your KPIs are and what your group strategy is going forward and be rigorous keeping to it. No apologies, no ifs, no buts. Moreover, many leaders don't delegate appropriately. We've already handled that topic in Chapter 11. As we've discussed, delegation is about growing and developing your reports. After all, as the old saying goes, if you can't be replaced, you can't be promoted. Remedies for clawing back time. Number 1. Next day planning list. Each weekday afternoon, make a list of what you have to do the next day. Because if you haven't committed to your day in writing, it probably won't happen. Let me tell you very clearly, when you write things down, your brain gets it. Writing is very, very powerful. Try to get into the habit of doing this at the end of the day. Some of my clients spend the last 10 to 15 minutes while they are at work to sort through their list for the next day. A few prefer to do this after dinner or just before bedtime, as long as it doesn't then keep you awake by thinking about it. But the more that you can introduce this task into a routine, the more likely it will be that you will actually get things done. Number 2. Do your most important job first. Do your most important job first each day. Lots of people confess to being procrastinators. We kind of put things off and delay. There's a story about a steel manufacturing CEO from the United States who was given this idea by an employee of doing the most important job first, and he was so grateful that he sent his employee a check for $35,000. The CEO said, "This is how much doing the most important thing first each day has saved me." Publius Syrus once said, "To do two things at once is to do neither." Many of us get distracted first thing in the morning, for example, with our emails and perhaps Facebook or Twitter or surfing the net. The minutes go by, and before we know it, a half hour is gone or even more. Yet the morning is when we are freshest and have the most energy, and hence, this is when we need to do the jobs that matter most. emails and the like can wait. Number 3. Substantially reduce one time waster each week. Your task is to try to reduce time wasting, and although you'll never completely succeed in eliminating all those time wasters in your life, you would do well to try to reduce at least some of them. What would it take, for example, for you to reduce general interruptions? Would that mean booking an interview room where you can work on a report in peace and quiet? What would it take to look at ways in which meetings can be shortened and more productive? Number 4. Spend your time as though you had to buy it. Think about that for a moment. Before you spend an hour or more reading a report or going to a particular meeting, ask yourself, would I spend my own money to do this? If you look at your time as a financial investment and see how you spend it, you might make more prudent decisions about how you are spending time. Number 5. Batch routine jobs. Most people complain about some of the biggest time wasters being social media or responding to emails. For these kinds of tasks, it is important to have a batching routine by carving out specific times in the day for such tasks and then communicating this routine to recipients and others. For example, with emails, you can employ an autoresponder message which says something like, "Thank you for your message, but I only check emails twice a day at 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. on weekdays. If the matter is urgent, please phone whatever. This means that you're not then distracted through the day with those constant emails, and people know what your procedure is, and you also give them an avenue if the issue is urgent. Henry David Thoreau once said, "Our life is frittered away by detail. Simplify, simplify." Number 6. Reduce distractions. We all have them, and these distractions all seem to vie for our attention. What can you do to eliminate these or reduce their impact? The best time managers will turn off their social media notifications, close down all unnecessary tabs on their computer, and put their phone on airplane or flight mode. Some bring in noise-cancelling headphones into the office, which are especially helpful in an open-plan office. Of course, you can always close your door and even put a sign on it to say, "Do not disturb," or words to that effect, or else book out an interview room to yourself to ensure some solitude while you work on an important matter. It's vital to do all you can to remove as many distractions as you can to assist you to concentrate and focus on what is in hand. Number 7. Keep meetings under 15 minutes. A tip for running meetings: circulate the agenda beforehand and conduct the meeting standing up. It's a great way to get through meetings. I left a job at a hospital some time back because of what John Cleese calls in his original training film, "Meetings, Bloody Meetings." There were so many meetings. All those meetings finally got to me. I used to sit in the meetings and calculate the amount of money being wasted in wages for the sake of people just talking to hear themselves talk. I wish I'd known this rule back then. I coach a principal in a pathology company, and each morning they have a 10 to 15 minute stand-up meeting around the kitchen table in the staff room. Everyone gets a sense about what is happening for the day and can report on the activities of the previous day. Similarly, there is a young man I coach who is a fitter and turner by trade, and he has instituted toolbox meetings each morning where the workers stand around in a group to be briefed on what's on for the day and the day's priorities. It takes no longer than 10 minutes. He says it's invaluable in that it's short, employees know what is going on, and it has cut down the mistakes that are made in the factory. Maybe think about daily meetings, but 15 minutes at a time. Number 8. maximum of 4 meetings in a day with gaps. If you're not able to limit your meetings to 15 minutes, then one of the most effective recipes for managing time that I've worked out with executives and leaders is this. Limit yourself to a maximum of 4 meetings in a day, but more importantly, ensure that there is at least a half-hour gap between meetings. If you really want to stress yourself and be ragged at the end of the day, then try for back-to-back meetings and cram the day with them. It's a surefire way to drain your energies quickly and to make sure that you become non-productive and ineffective. I've seen it countless times. The meetings are back-to-back, but they always seem to run over time. The leader is immediately stressed because the meeting has gone over and then arrives late to the next meeting without any time to collect their thoughts or get prepared. They arrive at the next meeting and due to the fluster of getting there late, it takes them 10 to 15 minutes to get their head right to participate in the present meeting. Of course, too, they may well have had actions from the previous meeting which are now mounting up and will be added to the actions from the present meeting. You can see how this mounts up, and by the end of the day, the leader is completely frazzled or fried. Number 9. Spend up to 30 minutes a day thinking. Someone once said, "Thinking is the hardest work there is," which is probably why so few engage in it. Those who spend time actually thinking for at least 15 minutes a day, and preferably 30 minutes, have an edge on others because they've done their homework beforehand and have life a bit more in perspective. This is actually what effective leaders do, and we all are our own personal leaders. I've coached a number of leaders and individuals who have lamented that they don't have enough time to be able to sit and plan and think. Failure to do so inevitably means that you are handling more crises and putting out more fires than you need to do. Maybe you won't put aside time on a daily basis, but how about weekly? I've coached a CEO, for example, who has decided that each Thursday she will go into the office in the morning and then around 10:30 a.m. tell people that she was going out. She'd take the lift to the ground floor and walk around the corner to a coffee shop where she'd sit and think and plan for the next hour at least. I coached an architect who would each Friday morning tell his executive assistant that he was going out for a meeting and then go down to the state library for 2 hours with his laptop, his iPad, to think, plan, and strategize. Put aside time to think. It helps directly in being able to control your life and get life more in balance. Time in 4 boxes. You may be familiar with Dr. Stephen Covey, a popular author who wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. If you haven't read that book, put it on your to-do list to read. It's been a bestseller for over 25 years. In that book, Covey said that there are 2 ways to really understand time, or 2 dimensions to time, namely, that which is urgent and that which is important. In other words, he said you can think about things being urgent and not urgent, and there are things that are important and not important in regards to time. It's an interesting concept in which to think about time, and it gives a very interesting perspective that most people find helpful once it has been explained. He said that when you divide time up into those 2 categories, you get some enlightening patterns developing. You actually get 4 quadrants in a particular table. In the first quadrant, you have things that are both urgent and important. These include crises, pressing problems, projects, and meetings that are deadline-driven. This is the firefighting quadrant. This is where most people tend to live their day, especially in the work environment. Live all of your life in this quadrant, though, and you'll become stressed. You'll become anxious and/or depressed and/or grumpy, irritable, angry, and sadly, you will eventually burn out. Proverbs 21:5 says, Careful planning puts you ahead in the long run. Hurry and scurry puts you further behind. Going down the table is the third quadrant, where things are also urgent but not important. They might look important, but they really are not. Covey calls this the quadrant of deception. These include interruptions, some phone calls, some mail, some emails, some reports, some meetings. They may look like they are pressing matters, but they're not really. We tend to lose a good deal of time in this quadrant focusing on things that feign importance but are not really important. In a sense, we get conned and distracted by the unimportant. Then there is the second quadrant, in which matters are not urgent, but they are important. This is the quality time quadrant. This is where you have to prepare things. You need to plan, prepare, create, think about things and work things out. This is where you take time out. You organize things, prioritize, and set things in order. You work out what's important to do and what you value. You might manage risk and determine plan A and a possible plan B for a situation. Finally, in quadrant 4, things are not urgent and they are not important. This is the escape quadrant. In this quadrant are things like trivia, social media, and junk mail, and some phone calls. This is when people stand at the photocopier or the water cooler and gossip at work, or surf the internet, or hang over the fence at home and talk about nothing, or turn on the television and veg out. In other words, they are all time wasters, and Covey argues that if you live all of your life in quadrant one, in the crises, then to relieve the pressure and to escape, you have to move down to quadrant four with the trivia. And if you spend too much time in this quadrant at work, then, you guessed it, you get fired. Brian Tracy says, "There is never enough time to do everything, but there is always enough time to do the most important thing." Good use of time. Now let me ask you two questions. What is the one activity that you know would have a significant positive impact on your personal life if you did it superbly well and consistently? And the second question, what is the one activity that you know would have a significant positive impact on your career if you did it superbly well and consistently? Think about these two questions. How would you answer them? Take a few minutes and write down your responses or think about it. Let me suggest that your answers would typically fall into one of seven categories, namely, improving communication, better planning and organizing, taking better care of yourself, seizing the opportunity, better preparation, personal development, and empowerment. If your answers did fall into one of these seven categories, then let me ask you a further question. In which quadrant do these activities fall? Answer: Quadrant 2. Quadrant 2 is important but not urgent. That's where we do our preparation, our planning, our thinking. So, if all of those activities are in quadrant 2 and they are important, why aren't you doing them? More particularly, what would it take for you to invest more time in these quadrant 2 activities? Remember, these activities will have a significant positive impact on your personal and professional life. So, how would you organize yourself to get some quadrant 2 time? What would it take for you to schedule some regular planning time? What is stopping you from getting some creative thinking time? How could you get around those obstacles? Finding quadrant 2 time gives people more control over their lives, gives them a sense of accomplishment, refreshes them, lifts their spirits, and re-energizes them. managing time and managing yourself in this way is a key to reducing your stress levels. Isn't it worth doing? I used to coach a partner in a law firm who would drive into the city each day, but en route, he would pull into a park overlooking lawns and gardens and spend 20 minutes thinking and planning his day. As it happens, he also did that on the way home so that he could get his head clear and not arrive home a grumpy old man. I also coached a director in a service company who, on the drive to work, would call into his special cafe for an early morning coffee for at least an hour or more to think and plan. Where would you go for your planning time? How often and when would you go? How would you work it into your daily routine? How would you remember to fit it into your schedule? What would need to happen so that it became a habit? Will Rogers says, "Half our life is spent trying to find something to do with the time we have rushed through life trying to save." Chapter 14, Summary. Being organized, getting things done. Time wasters. They are well known to most of us, but let's clearly name the worst offenders. Number 1, general interruptions. 2, meetings. 3, clutter. 4, lacking goals. 5, email. 6, poor structure. Remedies for clawing back time. So what are the ways that we can reclaim some of that valuable lost time? Number 1, next day planning list. 2, do your most important job first. 3, substantially reduce one time waster each week. 4, spend your time as though you had to buy it. 5, batch routine jobs. 6, reduce distractions. 7, keep meetings under 15 minutes. 8. Maximum of 4 meetings in a day with gaps. 9. Spend up to 30 minutes a day thinking. Time in 4 boxes. Dr. Stephen Covey said that there are 2 ways to really understand time, or 2 dimensions to time, namely, that which is urgent and that which is important. When you divide time up into those 2 categories, you get some interesting patterns developing. You get 4 quadrants where you get to understand what you are doing with your time and can attempt to control time more effectively. It is easy for an inexperienced manager to spend too much time putting out fires and meeting obligations. Then, when the manager must get away from these pressures to survive and keep a balance, they can fritter away time on trivial pursuits. No wonder there's never enough time to do the things that are really important. Instead, we need time to think, plan, build relationships, take care of ourselves, learn and improve ourselves, and prioritizing our time to be able to do these things will contribute greatly to our productivity and our sense of satisfaction. Failure to use time wisely is a recipe for frustration and discontent. Success comes from mastering time rather than letting it master you. Someone once said, "One thing that you can't recycle is wasted time."